Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Achtung Norwalk, broadcasting from the beautiful South Birmingham. Accept no substitute.
Welcome, 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 dear listeners, or should I say willkommen, bienvenue, vitami. I don't know about you, dear listeners, but I am trying to get through this international break weekend the best way that I can. It feels a little bit like that song by America. I'm walking through a desert on a horse with no name. So I thought I'd fill the void of our collective Millwall experience by trying to tie in together the international scene and Millwall, and consider with me, dear listeners, the list of international games played at the Den since obviously the first Den's creation in 1911. There's been a few, not many, a few international level games played at our dear ground. And for this list, I'm indebted, absolutely indebted to a great book by Dave Sullivan, well-known Mill historian. It's called Millwall Miscellany. It's about 10 years old. I bought it off of Amazon, and it's actually stacked full of tidbits of information about our dear club, including this particular list that I'm working from today. So a huge thank you to Dave, because it makes life so much easier when somebody else has pulled together this kind of information. But first up, probably the biggest, the only full international, the biggest game, the only full international ever to be played at Millwall was in 1911, March the 13th to be precise. It was one of the home international series, which for younger listeners, the home internationals were a wonderful end of season tournament played between each of the home nations, England, Scotland, Wales, Ireland, Northern Ireland, subject to the political changes. That all ended in the early 80s when there was just a general feeling that England were not getting anything out of these kinds of tournaments. And so I think they preserved the England-Scotland fixture for a few seasons afterwards, but even that fell by the wayside. A tremendous shame, in my opinion, because it was always it was a traditional end-of-season highlight to look forward to, certainly England versus Scotland, but also the England-Northern Ireland, England-Wales games and so on. I think attendances fell quite dramatically. Some of the Wales versus Northern Ireland games were attracting very, very low attendances, and that was one of the reasons upon which the tournament was ultimately finished. It's also known as the British Championships, home internationals in our time. But this particular game, England 3, Wales 0, was played on March the 13th, 1911. Just, what's that, 4 or 5 months after the opening of the Den in Colblow Lane. Mill having moved from the Isle of Dogs across the River Thames to New Cross. 25,000 people attended this home international game. James Murray's book, Lions of the South, is excellent on this. The club had some problems in that most of the ground was not yet concreted terracing. Presumably it was just earth bank embankments. So imagine 25,000 people standing in the old Den, if you can imagine that. But not on concrete, on earthen embankments. It must be something like out of the Stone Age. They're also not allowed, there was not enough turnstiles to get the crowd in. There must have been chaos, utter chaos. The Den had been not long opened in October 1910. That was also a chaotic opening day. Famously, the ground was opened by Lord Kinnaird, of the FA, and he went to the wrong end of the ground, had to be hoisted over the barriers to get him into the ground to actually do the ribbon cutting ceremony. So that must have been chaos. This almost certainly sounds like a chaotic afternoon. It was a full international, and I think this is what struck me doing this little bit of research. I mean, with Lord Kinnaird opening the ground, he was a mainstay of, he actually won the formative figures in the formation of the FA in the 1860s. He'd played in a record number of five FA Cup winners medals. I think he played in 9 finals, I read. Major figure in the world of football administration as it began in the 1860s, and also in the world of banking. So my point being that for a man of his stature and his standing in British society to open up the den, and then for it to be given the privilege of staging an international match, gives you some sense of that pre-First World War standing that the club held. Obviously, since then, that standing has dissipated. I think that's probably the most diplomatic way I can put it, with a few fits and starts since. But for the most part, it's hard to imagine now the den, even the new den, being allowed the privilege of a full international. But certainly we were here in 1911. As I said, a game finished with a 3-0 win for England. There's a great front page of the Athletic News and Cyclists Journal on the day of the game as a preview. They've got some photos of some of the leading lights. No Millwall players featured in the game, so there was no kind of local interest in that sense. Even so, 25,000 turned out for it. Pictures here of Bob Crompton, who is a 41 caps for England, Blackburn Rovers player with 530 appearances between 1896 and 1920, he featured in the game. Bob Evans, who looks like a Sheffield United player, a Welsh international. The leading footballer of his day was Vivian Woodward, who is also pictured here. He played in this particular match, played for Spurs and Chelsea, but also famously was a member of the First World War Footballers Battalion. Big picture of him wearing his England, white England shirt there with the three lions on it. And interestingly, if you like me, you find these things interesting, the brother of future manager Charlie Hewitt played in this particular game. His name was Tom Hewitt, and he played in a fullback role, played for Wrexham, apparently. Strange how these links. I'm just looking at the Welsh side, actually. There's also a famous name, Billy Meredith, as a Manchester United player. I think he was one of the early big transfer figures in the game. And another one, the Reverend Kenneth Hunt, K Hunt, what a name, who played for Leighton FC, not Leighton Orient, Leighton FC. And he was actually a reverend, a man of God. A muscular Christian he's described of in this profile I'm just looking at here. He also featured. Goals for Woodward, we've already mentioned him, 1-0 in 65 minutes. Vivian Woodward scored the opener. George Webb, who played for West Ham, he also struck 2 minutes later on the 67th minute. And finally, another one for Vivian Woodward, second goal on 83 minutes to seal the win for England. That was a 3:30 kickoff on Monday, the 13th of March, 1911. Wonderful details you get from this. I've got a match report here. The game itself seems to have been slightly of a disappointment. This is from the Daily Herald, printed on the 14th of March, 1911. International in the snow. It snowed in March. Can you believe that, dear listeners? The Herald was unimpressed by proceedings, though. The international game between England and Wales was played at the Den, Millwall. Not in Millwall, it was New Cross. Yesterday, under as bad conditions as could very well be imagined. When it was not snowing, it was raining. And before the end, the ground showed distinct signs of wear, which is putting it mildly, says this journalist. However, the men stuck to their work in commendable fashion. And for those of the onlookers who were not exposed to the elements of the game, it was quite enjoyable. Wales didn't put up much of a fight as been anticipated. They came into the game in some form, apparently. And though they kept their lines intact till after the refresher, that means half-time, They eventually had to knuckle under by three clear goals. Right from the commencement, it was obvious that the Welshmen were in for a bad time. For the English forwards fairly revelled in the heavy going at Millwall. Can you imagine that? Snow, rain, standing on bare earth or bare ground embankments, and you're down the old Kent Road. So that was quite an honour for Millwall. Clearly, as we've said before, the Lions of the South were seen as one of the major clubs, particularly in the south of England. And to be given the blessing of an FA opening for the ground just a few months before in 1910, and then the privilege of staging a full international, shows you some measure of how highly regarded Millwall was seen. Obviously, the First World War and then, you know, the 20s, 30s, Second World War would pass, and a long while, in actual fact, until anything remotely close to a game of that standing that would be given to the Den. The next international fixture from Dave's list goes from 1911 there for England 3, Wales 0, all the way up to 1989. This was an England B international. England B versus Yugoslavia B. Yugoslavia, and I suppose I ought to explain this for younger listeners, but Yugoslavia being the federated nation of what is now Serbia, Croatia, Montenegro, Bosnia, all of which descended into civil war. Not as a result of this game, I hasten to add, but it was played quite close to the demise of the country as Yugoslavia. This was played on December the 12th, 1989, at Coldblow Lane again. England B2, Yugoslavia B1. Went the 2-1 win for the English side there. Goals from future Millwall manager, another link. Dennis Wise would score the opener on 7 minutes for England. Mike Newell, was he an Everton player, I think? Mike Newell, 64 minutes, made it 2-0. And then a Yugoslav player, I don't know, Miladinovic on 82 minutes. I've got a report here from the Daily Mirror. The main point from the game really was the arrival on the scene of Paul Gascoigne. England 2, Yugoslavia 1. Gazza steals the show. Magic man, says the Daily Mirror. Dated the 13th of December 1989. England boss Bobby Robson last night put Paul Gascoigne under the microscope at Millwall, but missed half an hour of his magic. Robson was delayed by heavy traffic. So we had rain and snow in the first international back in 1911, and then heavy traffic. And it did get quite heavy trying to get to Coldblow Lane, didn't it, dear listeners, for those of you that ever drove it. Bobby Robson didn't arrive until 30 minutes into the game after the start of this B international at the Den. By then, England were a goal ahead. Gazza had helped make it. So Gazza was the assist. Dennis Wise was the opener on 7 minutes. And it showed that he is equipped to make the World Cup finals in Italy. That will be played a year later in 1990. Bobby Robson, it continues, wanted one more look at the flamboyant Spurs star before he decided whether to promote him to the senior side, and he answered the temperament questions and talent questions. Last night, the fat boy was a good boy, says Nigel Clark of the Daily Mirror. A real arrival on the scene for Paul Gascoigne. For me, and I don't know about you, dear listeners, you might differ with me on this. For me, Paul Gascoigne was the single most talented Englishman I've ever seen play. I was privileged to actually say I saw him because we played Spurs in that promotion season 88-89. They demolished us at White Hart Lane and put five past us at Coldblow Lane. Certainly the one at White Hart Lane, which was a 3-0 or 3-1? 3-0, I think. It was a Gazza show. I mean, there's no disputing that he ran the show. He responded to the insults from the terraces, famously sticking the ball up his shirt for the fat boy, and then proceeded to put a free kick from distance past Brian Horn. I think that opened the scoring from memory. He turned it on, and the more the barracking came down, the more he turned it on, as do the great players. I include Ian Wright, actually, who's also mentioned in this particular report. The England team that day, in goal for England, Chris Woods, substituted by Nigel Martin. Chris Woods, Sheffield Wednesday. Nigel Martin made his name at Crystal Palace. Lee Dixon, replaced by Mel Stirland. M. Forsyth, I can't remember. Who's that, Mike? M. Forsyth, can't remember him. David Batty, Leeds player. Andy Linnigan, Arsenal, replaced by Gary Pallister of Manchester United. Tony Adams, Dennis Wise, we've mentioned. Paul Gascoigne, Ian Wright, replaced by Mike Newell. P. Williams, that Paul Williams, I think he was a Southampton player. And then Peter Beagrie, replaced by Gary Parker. That was the England side. That's a decent England side, even with the substitutions. So England 2, Yugoslavia 1, B. 8,231, which was not that high a crowd, was it, dear listeners? And that was part one of the things. I mean, you compare that. I know it was a full international, the first game, and different times and all the rest of it. 25,000 turning out for Coldblown Lane, and then just 8,000 in 1989. I don't know. Maybe that was... it probably reinforced the FA's desire not to give too much to Millwall. I'm amazed we actually got that. These were in the first division days for 88-89, so it was 89-90 season, sorry. So maybe we were trying desperately to re-establish our credentials with the FA, and that was a reward. We would get another international fixture. That was played in 1989, that B one between England and Yugoslavia. We would get an under-21 international, which is not actually, you know, I suppose they're both prestigious in their different ways. In 1994, we would lose at home, England being we. I'm including myself in this, so apologies if you're not English. I'm presuming that you're in the we of being English, dear listeners. I apologise if that's not the case. England under 21 won, Poland under 21 2. That was played at the New Den to celebrate the opening of the new ground on the 7th of September 1994 as part of the UEFA under 21 championships. The English goal being scored by Hugo Ehiog. There's a name from the past. Hugo Ehiog. That was played in front of just 5,390. I know that under 21 games don't get the crowds, obviously. They don't now. They tend to be spread out over different locations away from Wembley, don't they? And I think this was part of that programme of playing, you know, the under 21 games at smaller venues, and as the then New Den had not long been open, so you had that linkage again of new ground. We did in 1911 with Wales, and we do again here in 93 with the England Poland game. The England team for this under 21 international: Ian Walker in goal, remember him? Ian Walker, Matthew Jackson for Everton, I don't remember him. Hugo Ehiog, I remember him, Aston Villa. Neil Cox, Brian Small, also of Aston Villa, three Villa players in the side. Darren Anderton, famously, would go on to bigger things with Spurs. Replaced by Michael Sheeran, I don't remember him. Gary Flitcroft, I do remember. Manchester City, Jamie Redknapp played in this particular game for England. Replaced by Neil Ardley, who would be involved as a player with Millwall late in his career. He's a Wimbledon player at this point. Steve McManaman, younger listeners will know his voice from the BT Sports coverage. He's a pundit on there. Then Andy Cole for Newcastle at this time, and Chris Sutton playing for Norwich at this point. So, yeah, England 1, England under-21s 1, Poland 2. That would be the final time that the FA would endorse Millwall Football Club with one of their big games, England games. We do have a couple of other international fixtures played at the New Den since. These have been kind of stadiums for hire type setups. So we have a Ghana 1, Senegal 1 friendly match played on August the 21st, 2007. A couple of big names involved in that. El Hadji Diouf playing for Senegal, who scored the goal in the 72nd minute. And I saw another name for in the Ghanaian side. Where is it? Junior Agogo, 85 minutes. Michael Essien, there he is. Michael Essien playing for Ghana. And their goal was scored by Azimoa Gyan in the 43rd minute. So they take the lead, and then Senegal equalised in the 72nd minute. That was played in front of... We don't have a crowd for it on this. This is a screenshot from international football website. No crowd for that. Refereed by Andy Durso, who would later haunt our collective imaginations, wouldn't he? Andy Durso, international friendly. And the final, similar kind of setup, hiring the stadium out for kind of friendly games. Arsenal went through a phase of doing that with Argentina and Brazil playing there, I remember. We did it with Jamaica 0, Nigeria 0, friendly game played in the 11th of the 2nd, 2009. And it actually refers to Brazil playing Italy the previous night at the Emirates Arsenal Stadium. 5,000 turned out for a goalless draw, it says here. Not much on offer in terms of playing it. The article is very patronisingly written, as often with the press, I find. You always have to refer to prison life and criminality when you're talking about Mill, don't you? There's a couple of paragraphs here about prison chants, people being moved from different wings, and these are conversations allegedly heard at the old Coldblow Lane, which is completely irrelevant to this particular game. But the whole thing is just like a patronising take on like an Only Fools and Horses view of what regular life might be like. I don't know. Written by the Guardian, so I suppose that reinforces every prejudice you might have about that liberal newspaper. John Barnes was managing the Jamaica side for this particular game, and Michael John Obi was playing for the Super Eagles of Nigeria. But 0-0 it finished in front of just 5,000 and something. Not particularly memorable game. And that's been the final international level game played at our ground, dear listeners. Just one or two other talking points that Dave did list in his book, Mill Miscellany. There's an international 11, Canadian 11, played Mill Athletic in 1891. This would be at the Athletic Ground back on the Isle of Dogs, so we're going back a long way now. That was the first overseas side to play Millwall, and it was the 36th game of the Canadian team's tour. This was played at 11. This was played at the Athletic Ground, so on 23rd of the 11th, 1896. The Sporting Life mentions a crowd of 4,000 spectators lining the ropes. Had the weather not been so unfavourable, they would have expected more. Greatly augmented would have been to the crowd, they say. At one point, it appeared that play might be stopped owing to darkness intervening, but fortunately, the light became better. So we've got a grim day on the Isle of Dogs, one each for the Canadians and a Millwall side in 1896. We've mentioned before on these shows, and I'm not going to flog it, the 9-0 win over a German select 11 played in 1896. That was played before the German Football Association, the Deutsche Fußballbund, was formed. So it was actually just a kind of an 11 put together by certain figures in the German game. That was the biggest defeat of the German team's tour in 1896. We have touched on that before, so I won't bang on about that. I'm sure I've also mentioned in 1967 a Millwall win over the Italian Olympic 11 ahead of the Mexico Olympics tournament in 1968. This was played in August 1967. Millwall won the Italian Olympic 11-0. Keith Weller scoring direct from a corner, apparently. And I've certainly mentioned this fixture before. I remember speaking about it. Mill 3, the United Arab Emirates 1. That was played on the 21st of August 1984 at Harlow. What a strange place for... Must have been like a pre-season warm-up game. I had very little detail on that fixture. Played in Harlow. Mill 3, UAE 1. Wonderful fixture that never happened. Can you include that on a podcast? I think I can do whatever I want to, dear listeners. Millwall versus Iran, July 2005, in the wake of the terrorist incidents in London. It got cancelled for sit on security grounds. That would have been a wonderful event to have been there, wouldn't it? Millwall versus Iran. It got cancelled in the light of those tragedies and... Probably for the best. So there we are. And finally, one last game. And I didn't go to this one. I kind of wish I did, but I didn't. The Unity in the Community Cup. Were you there, dear listeners? I wasn't. I think I put it in the category of being a friendly game, a pre-season warm-up. Played in 2007 in August. So it probably was a warm-up. Mill 2. Sierra Leone 1, goals by Neil Harris in the fourth minute, and then a late winner by Gary Alexander. Brief report from the BBC, Sierra Leone suffered a 2-1 defeat at the hands of English League One side Millwall in London at a friendly on Saturday. Millwall got off to a dream start and took the lead with just 3 minutes on the clock. Dave Brammer providing a deep curling delivery which Neil Harris was perfectly placed to head past goalkeeper Christian Corker. But the Leone stars rallied and grabbed the equaliser 12 minutes later through Djibrila Kagbo, who thumped an unstoppable shot past Chris Day. There's a name, Chris Day, remember him? The home side sealed the win deep, deep into injury time when Gary Alexander took advantage of a defensive slip-up to seal the win. Sierra Leone missed most of their European-based players as most of them are involved in pre-season preps ahead of the new season. That's from the BBC's website and that's dated the 5th of August 2007, Unity in the Community Cup. I've seen that. I've been in the boardroom for various reasons over time. And there's a very small trophy cupboard. We don't have a big trophy cupboard, do we, at Millwall? But the Unity in the Community Cup resides there. Probably ours for life. I can't see it ever being replayed. There we are. Those are all by the ways. None of those are really featuring as full-scale internationals. So the full list of international games played with Millwall, we've mentioned England 3, Wales 0 in 1911. Then we have to wind forward to the England B2, Yugoslavia B1 in 1989. England under 21s 1, Poland 2 in 1994. And then these tour games, friendly games, Ghana 1, Senegal 1 in 2007, and Jamaica 0, Nigeria 0. In 2009, nothing since. So few and far between, I think, is the way that I'd put that, dear listeners. I can't imagine we're being allowed anything other than kind of tour games, and even those seem to have faded away somewhat. So anyway, we'll see. Fascinating little list. Huge thank you to Dave Sullivan and his book for giving me the framework in which to try and fill in some of the colour around those fixtures. I hope you've enjoyed this little interlude. We're looking now at the resumption of club football from next weekend onwards. We'll go to Middlesbrough and I'm hoping to bring you a post-match edition from the Riverside Stadium. So until then, dear listeners, thank you for listening. Really appreciate it. And from myself, Nick Hart, thank you for listening and arrivederci, Mill. Bye for now.
To Aston Millwall. If you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a cheeky little review. Arrivederci Millwall. Till next time.
Who do you want to watch?